being a part of my life. That was safe and easy. But I've forgotten the blazing, can't think of anything else madness of these days of meeting someone. There wasn't even a spark of that left with Kay for the last year, maybe even. I look across at Tiffy again, her eyelashes casting shadows on her cheeks, and think back to what she's told me about Justin. Notes made me feel he wasn't especially good to her. Why did she have to pay back that money all of a sudden? But nothing as alarming as what she'd said on the train. But then, as much as they were significant to me, they were just notes. Easier to lie to yourself in writing and for nobody to spot it. Head is too full of panic, regret, and whiskey buzz for me to sleep. Stare up at the ceiling. Listen to Tiffy's breath. Play out all the ways it could have gone. If we'd kissed, and she'd stopped me. If we'd kissed and she hadn't. Best not to pursue that one. Thoughts becoming inappropriate. Tiffy turns over, dragging the duvet with her. Half of my body is now exposed to nighttime air. Can't really begrudge her, though. Important that she gets warm after near drowning. She turns over again. More duvet. Now only my right arm has coverage. Absolutely cannot sleep like this. I'll have to just pull it back. Try it gently at first. But it's like playing tug of war. The woman has the duvet in a vice-like grip. How can she be this strong when unconscious? Going to have to opt for an assertive yank. Maybe she won't wake up. Maybe she'll just... Ow! She came with the duvet, rolling over, and I seemed to have migrated towards the middle too, and now we're face to face in the darkness, tantalizingly close. My breath quickens. Her cheeks are flushed, her eyes heavy with sleep. I belatedly clock she just said, ow. The movement must have jerked her ankle. Sorry. She answers, confused. Did you try pull the duvet off me? No, I was trying to get it back. Tiffy blinks. I really want to kiss her. Could I kiss her now? She's probably sobered up. But then she winces at the pain in her ankle, and I feel like the world's worst human being.
Get it back from where?
Well, you sort of stole it all. Oh, sorry. Next time just wake me up and tell me. I'll go right back to sleep. Oh, okay, sure. Sorry. Tiffy shoots me a half-amused, half-asleep look as she rolls back over, pulling the duvet up to her chin. I turn my head into the pillow. Don't want her to see that I'm smiling like a love-struck teenager because she just said, next time.
Chapter 45. I wake to the daylight, which is much less pleasant than people make it sound. We didn't close the curtains last night. I turn my face away from the window instinctively, rolling over and realising the right-hand side of the bed is empty. At first it feels totally normal. I wake up every day in Leon's bed without him there after all. My sleepy brain goes, oh, of course. No, hang on, wait. There's a note on his pillow. Gone out in search of breakfast. Back soon bearing pastries, kiss. I smile and roll back the other way to check the time on my phone on the bedside table. Shit. 27 missed calls, all from an unknown number. What the? I scramble out of bed, heart thumping, then yelp with pain as I knock my ankle. Fuck. I dial voicemail, a bad feeling blooming in the base of my stomach. It's like yesterday was too good to be true. Something terrible has happened. I knew I shouldn't have...
Tiffy, are you all right? I saw Rachel's status on Facebook. Did you nearly drown?
It's Justin. I go very still as the message rolls on.
Look, I know you're in a mood with me at the moment, but I need to know you're okay. Call me back.
There are more like this. 12 more, to be precise. I deleted his number after a particularly girl power-inducing counselling session, so that'd be why the calls came from an unknown number. I think I knew who it was going to be, though. Nobody else has ever called me that many times before, but Justin has, usually after a fight or a breakup.
Tiffy, this is ridiculous. If I knew where you were, I'd come out there. Call me, all right?
I shiver. This feels... I feel awful. Like yesterday with Leon should never have happened. Imagine if Justin knew where I'd been and what I'd been doing. I shake myself. I can feel that that doesn't make sense even as I think it. I'm scaring myself again. I tap out a text. I'm fine. I lightly sprained my ankle. Please don't call me anymore. Within moments, he replies. Oh, thank God. What are you like without me there to look after you, hey? You made me so worried. I'll be good and stick to your rules. No contact until October. Just know I'll be thinking of you. Kiss, kiss. I stare at the message for a while. What are you like? As if I'm such a klutz. Yesterday, Leon pulled me out of the sea, and yet this is the first time all weekend I felt like the girl who needs rescuing. Fuck this. I hit block and delete all the voicemails from my phone. I hop to the bathroom. It's not the most dignified method of travel. The chintzy lamps on the walls are vibrating a little as I go. But something about the general stompiness is quite therapeutic. Stomp, 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 stupid, bloody Justin. I slam the bathroom door with satisfying force. Thank God Leon went out for breakfast, both because he avoided witnessing this mess of a morning and because he will hopefully return with something highly calorific to make me feel better. Once I've showered and redressed in yesterday's clothes, which, because they're covered in grainy, shingly grit, also ticks exfoliating off my to-do list, I hop back to the bed and launch myself onto it with a thud, burying my face in the pillow. Ugh. Yesterday was so lovely, and now I feel all horrible and mucky, like the voicemails left a taint on me. Still, I blocked him, something I would never have been able to bring myself to do a few months ago. Maybe I should be glad of all those voicemails for pushing me to do it. I sit up on my elbows and reach for the note Leon wrote me. It's on hotel stationery. The Bunny Hop Inn is traced in jaunty letters across the bottom of the paper. The handwriting is just the same as ever, though. Leon's neat, tiny, rounded letters. In a moment of embarrassing sentimentality, I fold the paper in half and reach to slip it into my handbag. There's a quiet knock on the door. Come in, I call. He's dressed in a giant t-shirt with a picture of three sticks of rock on the front, and Brighton Rocks in big letters underneath. My mood immediately improves about tenfold. There's nothing like a man in a novelty t-shirt to brighten up your morning, especially when he's holding a very promising paper bag with Patisserie Valerie written on the side. One of Bab's finest, I say, pointing at the t-shirt. My new personal stylist, Leon says. He passes me the bag of pastries and sits down on the end of the bed, smoothing his hair back. He's nervous again. Why do I find his nervous fidgeting so adorable? You made it to the shower, okay? He asks eventually, nodding towards my wet hair. With your foot, I mean. I showered flamingo style. I curl one knee up. He smiles. Getting one of those lopsided grins from him feels like winning at a game I wasn't aware I was playing. The door doesn't lock, though. I thought you might walk in on me, but it seems Karma was busy elsewhere this morning. He makes a strangled sort of mm-hmm sound and busies himself eating his croissant. I suppress a smile. An unfortunate side effect of finding his nervous fidgeting adorable is that I seem unable to resist saying things I know will make him fidget. But anyway, you've basically seen me naked, I go on. Twice. Already. So you wouldn't have been in for any huge surprises. He looks up at me this time. Basically, he says emphatically, is not the same as actually. Some key differences, in fact. My stomach flips. Whatever that awkwardness was last night, I definitely wasn't imagining the sexual tension. The air is heavy with it. It should be me worrying about the lack of surprises, he says. You've actually seen me naked. I did wonder, when I walked in on you in the shower, did you... He disappears in the direction of the bathroom so fast I barely hear the excuse he makes as he goes. As he closes the door behind him and turns the shower on, I smile. I guess there's my answer. Rachel will be delighted.
Chapter 46. I've never thought this hard about the notes before. It was much easier when I was just scribbling random thoughts to friend who I had not met. Now I'm carefully crafting messages to woman who has taken up residence in most of my waking thoughts. It's terrible. Sit down with pen and post it and suddenly forget all the words. Her messages are cheeky, flirty, noisily her. This is the first after the weekend in Brighton, fixed to the bottom door with blue tack. So, hey, Rumi, how's the transition back to nocturnal life gone today? I see that Fatima and family went through the bins again while we were away, little minxes. I wanted to write and say thanks again for whisking me out of the sea. Just make sure you fall in a large body of water at some point so I can return the favour, you know, in the name of equality. Also, because I feel like you'd really own the whole Mr. Darcy just out of the lake look. Kiss, kiss. Mine are stilted and overthought. Write them when I get in from work, then rewrite them before I walk out the door, then regret them all night in the hospice, until I get home to reply and feel instantly better again. Thus, the cycle repeats. Eventually, on Wednesday, I muster the courage to leave this one on the kitchen counter. Weekend plans? Kiss. Was paralysed by self-doubt as soon as I'd left the building and got far enough away for going back to be inconceivable. In retrospect, was a very short note. Perhaps too short for meaning to be clear. Perhaps insultingly short. Why is this so difficult? Now, though, I'm feeling better because of this. Well, I'll be home alone this weekend. Do you fancy coming over and cooking me your mushroom stroganoff? I've only ever had it reheated, and I bet it's even better fresh out the oven. Kiss, kiss. I reach for a post-it and scribble my reply. Tiffin for dessert? Kiss. On the phone to Richie.
You're nervous, aren't you?
No. No, no. Richie snorts. He's in good mood. He's generally in a good mood now. He calls Gertie at least every other day to catch up on appeal case progress. So much to talk about. Calls every other day are apparently essential. Evidence re-examined. Witnesses coming forward, and at last, CCTV obtained. Okay, a bit nervous.
You'll be great, man. You know she's into you. What's the plan? Is tonight the night?
Of course not. Look, far too soon.
Have you shaved your legs just in case?
Don't deign to respond to this. Richie chuckles.
I like her, man. You've got a good one.
Not sure I've got her yet.
What? You think the ex?
She doesn't love him anymore, but it's complicated. I'm a bit worried about her.
Was he a prick? He hurt her.
Got twists at the thought. To some degree, I think. She doesn't really talk about it with me, but got a bad feeling about him.
Shit, man. Are we dealing with some kind of post-trauma situation here?
You think so?
You're speaking to the King of Night Sweats. I don't know, I haven't met her, but if she's still processing some shit she had to deal with, all you can do is be there and let her decide when she's ready for whatever.
The trauma of the trial and the first month in prison hit Richie about 6 weeks into his sentence. Shaking hands, sudden terrors, intrusive flashbacks, jumping at the slightest noises. The last part always annoyed him the most. He seemed to think that particular brand of PTSD should be reserved for people whose trauma had actually involved loud noises, like soldiers.
And don't try to make the decision for her. Don't assume she can't be feeling better yet. That's her call.
You're a good man, Richard Toomey.
Hold that thought. Tell the judge in 3 weeks' time, bro.
Arrive at the flat five-ish. Tiffy's with Mo and Gertie for the day. Weird being here at a weekend. It's her flat now. Stop short of shaving legs, but do spend inordinately long time getting ready. Can't stop thinking about where we are each going to sleep tonight. Will I go back to Mam's or sleep here? We've already shared a bed in Brighton. I consider messaging to say I'll sleep at Mam's tonight to show goodwill, but decide that's putting nail in coffin earlier than necessary and is an example of making decisions for her, as advised against by Richie, so I leave it be. Key and door. I tried to spring up from the beanbag, but that would be impossible even for a person with thighs of steel. So Tiffy walks in to find me in a half squat, attempting to extricate myself. Tiffy, she's laughing. It's like quicksand, isn't it? She looks beautiful. Tight blue top and a long floaty grey skirt with bright pink shoes that she proceeds to balance on her good leg to remove. I move to give her a hand, but she waves me off, hiking herself up to sit on kitchen counter and make the job easier. Her ankle looks more mobile, though. Good sign. Seems to be healing well. She raises her eyebrows at me. Checking out my ankles. Purely medical interest. Tiffy grins at me, sliding down from the counter and limping over to examine the pot and the hob. Smells amazing. Something told me you'd like mushroom stroganoff. She smiles over her shoulder. I want to move behind her, put my arms around her waist and kiss her neck. Resist the urge, on account of it being very presumptuous and inappropriate. That was in your cubbyhole downstairs, by the way. She points to a small white envelope on the kitchen counter, addressed to me. I open it. It's an invite, handwritten in careful, slightly wobbly, joined-up letters. It's from Holly.
Dear Leon, I'm having a birthday party on Sunday because I'm going to be 8. Please come. Bring your friend Tiffy, who likes knitting.
Sorry that this is late. Mum says your proper invitation got lost at St. Mark's by one of the nurses who was rubbish, and then they said we couldn't have your address, but they said they will send this for us, so I hope they got it right anyway. Please come.
Holly.
Kiss, hug, kiss, hug, kiss, hug, kiss, hug, kiss, hug. Smile and show it to Tiffy. Maybe not what you had planned for tomorrow? Tiffy looks delighted.
She remembers me.
She was obsessed with you. We don't have to go, though.
Are you joking? We're totally going. Please.
You only turn 8 once, Leon.
Chapter 47. I really didn't think chocolate tiffin eating could be so sexually charged. We're sitting on the sofa in front of our television, which is basically just a novelty ornament shelf, with wine glasses in our hands and our legs touching. I'm not far off sitting in his lap, really. That's definitely where I want to be sitting. Go on, I say, nudging him with my knee. Tell me the truth. He looks shifty. I narrow my eyes at him, sliding nearer, my gaze flicking to his lips. He's doing the same, that eyes, lips, eyes thing that seems to tug you closer, and we hover in the moment as if we're at the top of a rope swing, waiting for gravity to kick in, feeling the tug but not quite going. No doubts this time. I know he's thinking about kissing me. Tell me, I say. He tilts his head, but at the last moment I pull back just a little, and he lets out a quiet huff, half amused, half frustrated at the teasing. Much shorter, he says reluctantly, pulling back too and reaching for another square of tiffin. I watch him lick chocolate from his fingers. Amazing, really. I've always found it weird how in films people think licking things like that is sexy, but here Leon is proving me wrong. Shorter. That's it. You told me that already. And dumpier. Dumpier? I crow. This was the stuff I was after. You thought I'd be dumpy. I just assumed, Leon says, shifting in and pulling me closer again so I'm almost bundled up against his chest. I lean into him, relishing the feeling. Short and dumpy, and what else? I thought you would dress weirdly. Well, I do, I point out, gesturing to the laundry drying in the corner, which includes my bright red pantaloons and the rainbow knitted jumper Mo got me for my birthday last year, though even I would draw the line at wearing those two items simultaneously. You make it look good, though, he says. Like you do it on purpose. It makes you look like you. I laugh. Well, thanks. And you? He asks, shifting his hold on me to take another sip of his wine. And me what? What did you think I'd look like? I cheated and looked you up on Facebook, I admit. Leon looks shocked, wine halfway to his mouth. I didn't even think of that. Of course you didn't. I mean, I would want to know what someone looked like if they were moving in and sleeping in my bed, but you don't care about appearances much, do you? He pauses to think about it. I cared about yours once I'd seen it. But otherwise, why would it make a difference? The first rule of the flat share was that we wouldn't meet. I laughed despite myself. We broke that one, then. That one? Don't worry. I wave him off. I don't fancy explaining Gertie's first rule or quite how much time I've spent thinking about breaking it. Ah, Leon says suddenly, catching sight of the time on my Peter Pan clock on top of the fridge. 12:30. It's late. He looks at me worriedly. Lost track of time. I shrug. That's okay. Can't get back to Mam's now. Last train was at 12:10. He looks pained. I'll just sleep on the sofa, if that's all right. On the sofa? Why? So you can have the bed. The sofa is tiny. You'd have to curl up in the fetal position. My heart's thumping. You have your side, I have mine. We've stuck to the left and right rule all year so far. Why should we change it now? He watches me, his eyes flicking back and forth across my face as if he's trying to read me. It's just a bed, I say, moving closer again. We've shared a bed before. Not sure this will be quite as straightforward, Leon says in a slightly strangled voice. On impulse, I lean forwards and press my lips lightly to his cheek, then again and again until I've kissed a path from his cheekbone to the very edge of his lips. I sit back and meet his eyes, my skin already buzzing, but the look he gives me sends a jolt through me, and now it's as if 80% of my body has suddenly become heartbeat. I swallow. We're as close as two humans can possibly be without kissing. There's no flicker of panic this time, just blissful, fiery wanting. So at last, I kiss him. When I kissed him on the cheek, I'd planned to make our first proper kiss soft and slow, the kind of kiss you feel in your toes. But when I actually get there, it's clear there's been way too much waiting and sexy tiffin eating for that. This is a proper kiss, the kind that promises very imminent undressing, the kind that generally happens while in the process of stumbling towards a bed. I'm not surprised, then, to find that when we surface for air, I'm straddling him, my hair hanging down on either side of us, my long skirt ruched to my thighs, his hands on my back pulling me as close as I can possibly be. We don't pause for long. I twist to dump my wine glass unceremoniously on the coffee table and shift a little to ease the angle on my ankle, and then we're kissing again, hungry, and my body is responding with the heat I genuinely don't think I felt before. One of his hands shifts to the back of my neck, grazing the side of my breast en route, and I pretty much yelp as the sensation hits. Everywhere and everything seems to be in overdrive. I have no idea what will happen next. I actually can't even consider the question. I'm incredibly grateful for that. All thought of flashbacks and exes has evaporated altogether. Leon's body is hard and warm, and all I can think about is getting all of these clothes out of the way so I can be as close to it as possible. This time, when I move to unbutton his shirt, he drops his grip on my waist to help me, shrugging it off and chucking it over the back of the sofa, where it hangs like a flag from the lamp. I run my hands over Leon's chest, marvelling at the strangeness of being able to touch him like this. I break away from him for just long enough to wriggle out of my top. He breathes in sharply, and as I lean back in to kiss him again, he stops me, hand on my upper arms, eyes on my body. I'm wearing a thin chemise under the top, its neckline following the line of my bra, dipping to a low V. God, he says, his voice hoarse. Look at you. Nothing you've not seen before, I remind him, already ducking in impatiently to get another kiss. He holds me back again, still staring. I let out a little frustrated noise, but then he moves to press his lips against my collarbone, then lower, kissing across the top of my breasts, and I stop objecting. It's become impossible to form thoughts for longer than about 2 seconds. They just evaporate. I can feel great sections of my brain rededicating themselves to thinking about sex. The part of my brain that deals with pain, for instance, has entirely forgotten about my ankle and is now much more interested in what exactly Leon's lips are doing as his kisses dip lower and lower to the edge of my bra. The section that usually busies itself with wondering if I look fat in things seems to have died off altogether. I've resorted to moaning because my brain's speech centre is clearly out of action too. Leon's hands dip under the waistline of my skirt, touching the silk of my underwear. I wore nice underwear, obviously. I may not have planned for this, but I hadn't not planned for it. I pull away and yank off the chemise. It's only getting in the way now. I'm going to have to stop straddling him in order for either of us to remove any more clothes, but I really don't want to. My brain makes a real effort at some long-term thinking, but that's no use, obviously, so I abandon the problem and hope Leon has some sort of solution. Bed? Leon says, his lips back up on my neck. I nod, but when he shifts underneath me, I mumble an objection, dipping my head to kiss him again. I can feel his smile against my lips. Can't get to bed without you moving, he reminds me, trying to shift again. I make another incoherent objection. He chuckles, lips still pressed against mine. Sofa? He suggests instead. Better. I knew Leon would have a solution. Reluctant, I slide off his lap so he can move. His hands tug at the fabric of my skirt, fingers searching for a zip or button. It's got a hidden zip, I say, twisting to find the zip tucked in the seam along my hip. Devilish women clothes, Leon declares, helping me pull the skirt off once it's undone. Like before, I move to press myself against him again, but he stops me so he can look at me properly. The look in his eyes makes my cheeks glow. I undo his belt and he breathes in sharply, his gaze back on my face as I unbutton his jeans. A little help? I say, eyebrow raised as I fumble around with the buttons. Leaving that part to you, he says. Take as long as you need. I grin, and he tugs off his jeans, then pulls me to lie down beside him on the sofa. We're a mess of limbs and cushion and skin. We completely don't fit. There's no space. We're laughing now, but only in between kisses, and wherever his body touches mine, it's like someone's reprogrammed my nerves to feel 5 times as much as usual. "Whose idea was the sofa?" Leon asks. His head is level with my chest. He kisses his way along the bottom of my bra now, and I moan. I'm incredibly uncomfortable, but discomfort is a small price to pay as far as I'm concerned. It's only when he elbows me in the stomach in an effort to sit up enough to kiss me that I call time. "Bed," I say firmly. Sensible woman. It takes us another 10 minutes or so to actually get moving. He gets up first, then as I shift to stand, he bends to pick me up again and carry me. "I can walk fine," I protest. "It's our thing. Plus, it's faster." He's right. He's laid me out on the bed in seconds, and then he's on top of me, his lips hot on mine, his hand on my breast. No laughing now. I can hardly breathe. I'm so turned on. It's absurd. I can't possibly wait any longer. And then the doorbell rings.
Chapter 48. We both freeze. I lift my head to look at her. Her cheeks are flushed red, her lips swollen from kissing, and her hair lies in a tangle of orange against the white pillows. Impossibly sexy. For you? What? No. But nobody I know thinks I'm here at weekends. Tiffy groans. Don't ask me complicated questions. I can't do thinking right now. I press my lips against hers again, but the doorbell rings for a second time. Curse. Rolled to side. Tried to calm down. Tiffy rolls with me so she's on top of me.
They'll go away.
This suddenly seems like by far the best suggestion. Her body is incredible. Can't stop myself from touching. I know I'm being way too scattergun. Hands all over her, but don't want to miss anything. I should have at least 10 more hands, ideally. Doorbell rings again. And again. 5-second intervals. Tivy throws herself back to her side of the bed with a growl.
Who the fuck is it?
We should answer. She reaches out and runs a finger from my belly button to my boxers. Mine goes entirely blank. Want her. Want her. Want her. Want... Doorbell, 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 doorbell.
Fuck, I'll go.
No, I'll go. I can wear a towel and pretend I was in the shower. Tiffy looks at me.
How the hell can you think of something like that right now?
My brain has stopped functioning. You're clearly much more distracting than I am. She's lying there, topless. Just a scrap of silk underwear between now and naked. It's taking enormous inner strength and insistent loud buzzing sound to hold me back. Trust me, you are very distracting. Tiffy kisses me. Doorbell now buzzing non-stop. It's not even pausing. Person has their finger held against buzzer. Whoever they are, I hate them. Pull myself away from Tiffy, swear again, and reach for towel on radiator as I stumble through bedroom to hall. Need to pull self together. We'll just answer door, punch person who has interrupted us, and then go back to bed. A good, solid plan. I press the button to let them up, then throw open the front door and wait. It occurs to me belatedly that as my hair is dry, it will not look like I've just got out of the shower. The man who appears in the doorway is nobody I've met before. He also is not the sort of man I would back myself to punch. He's tall, built in the way that suggests he spends a lot of time in the gym. Brown hair, perfectly trimmed beard, expensive shirt, angry eyes. Suddenly have a bad feeling about this. Wish I was wearing more than a towel. I say to him, "Can I help you?" He looks confused. The angry-eyed man replies,
"Isn't this Tiffy's place?"
"Yes, I'm her flatmate." Angry-eyed man does not look at all happy at this information.
"Well, is she in?"
"Sorry, I didn't catch your name." Gives me long, angry stare.
"I'm Justin."
"Ah. No, she's not in.
I thought she had this place at weekends."
"Did she tell you that?" Justin looks shifty for a moment. Covers well, though.
"Yeah, she mentioned it when I saw her last." "Your arrangement, the whole bed-sharing thing?"
She definitely wouldn't have told Justin about that. Pretty clear she'd know he wouldn't like it. Extremely hostile body language suggests that he does indeed not like it. "Room sharing. But yes, she normally has a place on weekends, but she's away."
"Where?"
Shrug. Look bored. Simultaneously stand that little bit taller. Just so he clocks we're the same height. It's a bit cavemanish of me, but feels good all the same.
How should I know? Can I see the flat?
What?
Can I see the place? Just have a look around.
He's already moving towards me like he's coming in. Suppose this is how he always gets his way, asking unreasonable things and then going ahead and taking them. I don't move. Eventually he has to stop walking because I'm directly in his way.
No. Sorry. You can't. He senses my hostility now. He's riled. He was already angry when he got here. He's like a dog on leash, snapping for a fight.
Why not?
Because it's my flat.
And Tiffy's? She's my... You're what?
Justin doesn't finish the lie. He knows, perhaps, that I will at least know whether Tiffy is single or in a relationship.
It's complicated, but we're very close, and I can promise you she wouldn't mind me looking around the place, checking it's up to standard for her.
I presume you have a subletting agreement, the two of you? All signed off by the property owner?
Do not want to get into this with this man. Also, do not have subletting agreement. Landlord hasn't spoken to me in years. I just haven't brought Tiffy up. You can't come in. Justin squares up to me. I'm wearing nothing but a towel around my waist. We're eye to eye. Really don't think Tiffy would enjoy it coming to a fight. I've got a girl in there, man. Justin jerks his head back. He wasn't expecting that.
You have?
Yeah. So I'd appreciate if you... His eyes narrow.
Who is it?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
What does it matter to you? It's not Tiffy, then.
Why would you think it was Tiffy? I just told you.
Yeah, she's away this weekend. Except I know she's not with her parents, and Tiffy doesn't leave London on her own for anything except to visit home. So...
He tries to push past me, but I'm ready for it. I put my weight into him, knocking him off balance.
Get out of here now.
I don't know what your problem is, but as soon as you entered my flat, you broke the law. So if you don't want me to call the police, if the woman in my bedroom hasn't done it already, then get the fuck out of here. I see his nostrils flaring. He wants to fight. It's taken all his energy not to. Not a pleasant sort of man. Though I notice that I'm ready for a fight too. I'm almost hoping he'll punch me. He doesn't though. His eyes flick to bedroom door and then take in the sight of my jeans spread out on the floor. My shirt hanging off Tiffy's ridiculous monkey lamp. Thank God Tiffy's clothes aren't visible. He'd recognise them, I imagine. What an unpleasant thought.
I'll be back to see Tiffy.
He backs out. Maybe call ahead next time to check she's in and wants to see you. Slam the door behind him.
Chapter 49. I mean, nobody would say it's nice having your ex-boyfriend turn up as you're getting with the new guy. Nobody would wish for something like that to happen, except perhaps for weird sexual reasons. But surely nobody else would be quite this upset. I am shaking, not just my hands, but my legs too, all the way up past my knees. I try to dress as quietly as I can, paralysed with the thought of Justin coming in here and seeing me in just my knickers, but I only get halfway before the fear of being heard overrules that impulse, and I sink back onto the bed in just my underwear and a giant jumper with Santa on it. It was the closest thing in the wardrobe. When the door to the flat slams, I jump as though someone's pulled a trigger. It's ridiculous. My face is wet with tears and I'm really, truly scared. Leon knocks gently on the bedroom door. It's just me, he calls. Can I come in? I take a deep, wobbly breath and wipe the tears from my cheeks. Yeah, come in. He takes one look at me and does what I did. Heads for the wardrobe and pulls out the nearest thing. Once he's dressed, he comes and sits on the far end of the bed. I'm grateful. Suddenly I don't want to be near anybody naked. Is he definitely gone? I ask. I waited until I heard the building door close too, Leon tells me. He's gone. He'll be back though, and I cannot face the idea of ever seeing him again. I can't. I hate him. I take another deep, juddering breath, feeling tears leaking out again. Why was he so angry? Was he always like that and I've just forgotten? I stretch out a hand towards Leon. I want to be held. He shifts across the bed and pulls me in against him, laying me down so he's behind me, my body tucked into his. He can feel he's losing his grip on you, Leon says quietly. He's scared. Well, I'm not going back this time. Leon kisses my shoulder. You want me to call Mo or Gertie? Will you just stay with me? Of course. I just want to go to sleep. Then sleep it is. He reaches around for the Brixton blanket, pulling it over the two of us, and then leans to flick off the lamp. Wake me if you need me. I don't know how, but I sleep all the way through, only waking to the sound of the guy upstairs doing whatever it is he always does at 7 a.m. It sounds like some kind of energetic aerobics involving lots of hopping. I'd be angry, but it is much better than my alarm waking me up for work. Leon is gone. I sit up, bleary-eyed from falling asleep after crying, and try to get a handle on reality again. Just as I'm working my way through yesterday, sadly finishing up with the good sofa bit and remembering Justin's arrival, Leon pokes his head in. Tea? Did you make it? No, I got the house elf to do it. I smile at that. Don't worry, I told him to make yours especially strong, he says. Can I come in? Of course you can, it's your bedroom too. Not when you're here. He hands me a suitably strong cup of tea. This is the first cup of tea he's ever made me, but just like I know how milky he likes his, he must have figured out how I drink mine. It's weird how easily you can get to know someone from the traces they leave behind. I'm so sorry about last night, I begin. Leon shakes his head. Please don't. It's not your fault, is it? Well, I did date him. Voluntarily. My tone's light, but Leon frowns. Relationships like that stop being about voluntarily very quickly. There's lots of ways someone can make you stay with them or think you want to. I tilt my head, looking at him as he sits on the edge of the bed, forearms on his knees, both hands around his mug of tea. He's talking to me half over his shoulder, and every time he meets my eyes, I want to smile. He's redone his hair. It's the neatest I've ever seen it, smoothed behind his ears and flicking into curls at the base of his neck. You seem very well informed, I say carefully. He's not looking at me now. Ma'am, he says by way of explanation. She spent a lot of her time with men who abused her. The word makes me flinch. Leon clocks it. Sorry, he says. Justin never hit me or anything, I say quickly, my cheeks flushing. Here's me making a fuss about a boyfriend who bosses me about a bit when Leon's mum has been through. That's not the sort of abuse I meant, Leon says. I meant emotional. Oh, is that what it was with Justin? Yes, I think immediately, before I have time to second-guess myself. Of course it bloody was. Lucy and Mo and Gertie have all been saying as much without saying it for months, haven't they? I swallow a gulp of tea, hiding behind my mug. It was hard to watch, Leon says, staring down at his tea. She's on the mend now. Lots of counselling, good friends, getting to the root of the problem. I'm trying that counselling thing too, he nods. That's good, that'll help. It is already, I think. It was Mo's idea and he's literally always right about things. I could do with one of Mo's audio hugs right now, actually. As I look around for my phone, Leon points to where it lies on the bedside table. I'll give you a minute. And don't worry about Holly's birthday, but it's probably the last thing you... He trails off at my outraged expression. You think I'm missing Holly's birthday because of last night? Well, I just thought it must have taken it out of you and... I'm shaking my head. Absolutely not. The last thing I want to do is let this Justin stuff get in the way of the important things. He smiles, his eyes lingering on my face. Well, okay. Thanks. We need to leave early enough to buy a present, I call after him as he leaves. I gave her the gift of good health, he calls back through the door. That won't cut it. It needs to be something from Claire's accessories.
Chapter 50. Holly's mum's home is a pokey, crumbling townhouse in Southwark. Paint peels everywhere and pictures lean on walls unhung, but it feels friendly. Just a little tired. Streams of children are darting in and out of the front door when we arrive. Feel slightly overwhelmed. I'm still processing last night, still buzzing with adrenaline from the altercation with Justin. We reported the incident to the police, but I want to do more. She should get a restraining order. Can't suggest it, though. Her choice. I'm helpless. We step inside the house. There are many party hats and a few crying babies, possibly baited into tears by boisterous 8-year-olds. Can you see Holly? Tiffy stands on one tiptoe, her good foot. Is that her? In the Star Wars outfit? Star Trek, and no. Maybe over there by the kitchen? Pretty sure it's a boy. Did you tell me this was fancy dress? You read the invite too. Tiffy ignores this, picks up an abandoned cowboy hat and plants it on my head. I turn to the hall mirror to admire the effect.
The hat perches on top of my hair precariously. Pull it off and put it on Tiffy instead. Much better. A sexy cowgirl thing. Very cliché, of course, but sexy nonetheless. Tiffy checks her reflection and yanks the hat down further.
Fine. You're a wizard, then.
She pulls a moon-covered cape off the back of a chair and reaches up to drape it over my shoulders, fixing it with a bow at my throat. Just the feel of her fingers makes me think of last night. It's a highly inappropriate location for these sort of thoughts. So I try to ward them off, but she is not helping. She trails her hands down my chest in a gesture familiar from time on sofa. Grab her hand.
Can't be doing that.
Tiffy quirks an eyebrow, mischievous.
Doing what?
At least if she's planning on torturing me in this fashion, it must mean she's feeling a little better.
Eventually locate Holly sitting on stairs and realise why she was so hard to spot. She looks completely transformed. Bright eyes, hair thicker and healthier, falling forward to be blown back impatiently as she talks. She's actually looking a little chubby.
Leon!
She skids downstairs, then stops short at bottom. She's dressed as Elsa from Frozen. Much like every girl hosting a birthday party in the Western Hemisphere since 2013. She's a little old for it, but then she missed out on most of her time being little, so...
Where's Tiffy?
She's here too. She's just gone to the bathroom. Holly looks placated, links her arm through mine and drags me off to the living room to try and feed me some small sausage rolls that have been fingered by unclean children.
Are you dating Tiffy yet?
I stare down at her, plastic cup of tropical juice halfway to mouth. Holly does her classic eye roll, thus convincing me that she is still the same person, not a chubbier lookalike.
Come on, you two are meant to be.
I look around nervously, hoping Tiffy is not within hearing, but I'm smiling too, it seems. Think fleetingly of my reaction to similar comments made about me and Kay. Generally was the sort of response that made Kay call me a commitment phobe. Admittedly, those comments rarely come from the mouth of a small, precocious child wearing a fake plait around her neck. Guess it fell off her head a while ago. I answer Holly. As it happens.
Yes, I knew it. Have you told her you love her?
It's a bit soon for that.
Not if you've been in love with her for ages.
Pause.
Which you have, by the way.
I reply gently. I'm not sure about that, Holly. We've been friends.
Friends who love each other.
Holly, well, have you told her you like her?
She definitely knows. Holly narrows eyes.
Does she, Leon?
I feel slightly discomposed. Yes, she does. The kissing is a clear clue, no?
You're terrible at telling people how you feel about them.
You hardly ever told me how you liked me better than all the other patients.
But I knew you did.
She stretches out her hands like case in point. I try not to grin. Well, I'll make sure she knows.
It doesn't matter. I'll tell her anyway.
And she's off, darting through the crowd. Shit. Holly, don't say any... Eventually find them together in the kitchen. Burst in at the end of what is clearly an intervention on Holly's part. Tiffy is leaning down to hear her, smiling, hair shining red gold under the overbright kitchen lights.
I just want you to know he's nice, and you're nice.
She stands on tiptoe and adds, in a stage whisper,
So, that means there isn't a doormat.
Tiffy looks up at me, inquiring. Pressed lips together as something warm and melting settles in my chest. I step in and pull Tiffy towards me, reaching over to ruffle Holly's hair. Weird, clairvoyant child.
Chapter 51. Mo and Gertie come round in the afternoon once Leon's headed off to his mum's place, and I fill them in on the night's dramas over a much-needed bottle of wine. Mo does his best empathetic nod. Gertie, on the other hand, just keeps swearing. She has some really inventively nasty names for Justin. I think she's been saving them up for some time. Do you want to stay at ours tonight? Mo says. You can have my bed. Thanks, but no, I'm fine, I say. I don't want to run away. I know he doesn't want to hurt me or anything. Mo doesn't look too sure about that. If you're certain, he says. Call us any time and we'll order a taxi to collect you, Gertie tells me, finishing off her wine. And give me a ring in the morning. You need to tell me about having sex with Leon. I stare at her. What? I knew it. I could just tell, she says, looking pleased with herself. Well, actually, we haven't, I tell her, sticking my tongue out. So your radar is off again. She narrows her eyes. There was nudity, though, and touching. On that very sofa. She jumps up as if she's been stung. Mo and I snigger. Well, Gertie says to me, brushing down her skinny jeans with distaste. We're seeing Leon on Tuesday, so we will make sure to grill him and check his intentions with you are all as they should be. Hang on, you're what? I'm talking him through where we're at with the case. And Mo is going along because... I look at Mo. Because I want to meet Leon, he says, unabashed. What? Everyone else has met him? Yes, but... I narrow my eyes. He's my flatmate. And my client, Gertie points out, grabbing her handbag off the counter. Look, meeting Leon may have been a huge rigmarole for you, but we can just drop him a text and meet for brunch like normal people. Annoyingly, there's not much I can say to that, and I can't exactly fault them for being overprotective friends in the circumstances. Without that, without them, I'd probably still be crying myself to sleep in Justin's flat. Still, I'm not sure I'm ready to be at meeting the friend stage with Leon, and the meddling is irritating. All's forgiven when I get home from work on Tuesday, though, and find this note on the coffee table. Bad things really did happen. Mo asked me to remind you. But you got through said bad things and now you are stronger for it. Gertie told me to pass on, though her version had more swear words. You're lovely, and I will never hurt you how he hurt you. That part was me. Leon. Kiss, kiss. You are going to love me, Rachel says, standing on tiptoes to talk to me over my wall of pot plants. I rub my eyes. I've just got off the phone to Martin, who has taken to calling me rather than walking down the corridor. I suspect he thinks it makes him seem like he's busy and important, far too busy and important for getting off his bum and coming to talk to me. Still, I now have the power to screen his calls, and if I really do have to talk to him, then I can make faces at Rachel at the same time, so there are upsides. Why? What have you done? Have you brought me a castle? She stares at me. It is so weird you just said that. I stare back at her. Why, have you actually bought me a castle? Obviously not, she says, recovering. Because if I could afford a castle, I'd buy one for myself first. No offence, but this does involve a castle. I reach for my mug and swing my legs out from under the desk. This conversation requires tea. We take our usual route to the kitchen, doubling back past the colour room to avoid the head of editorial and MD's desks, ducking behind the pillar by the photocopier so Hannah won't spot us, hitting the kitchen from an angle that ensures we can see if any senior members of staff are lurking in there. Go, go, talk, I tell Rachel as we step into the safety of the kitchen. Well, you know that illustrator I commissioned for our bricklayer-turned-designer second book, who's a Lord somebody? Sure, Lordy Lord Illustrator, I say. This is how Rachel and I refer to him. Well, Lordy Lord has come up with literally the perfect solution for Catherine's photo shoot. Marketing now want to showcase the products from Catherine's book. The mainstream media have been reluctant to come on board. They still don't quite get how YouTubers like Tasha Chai Latte's words translate into sales. So we're going to fund the shoot and seed it across social. Tasha has promised to share on her blog, and with just over 1 week to go until pub date, marketing and PR are having periodic meltdowns about getting the shoot organised. He owns a Welsh castle, Rachel finishes, in Wales, that we can use. You're serious? For free? Absolutely. This weekend. And because it's so far to drive, he said he'll put us up for Saturday night. In the castle. And the best part is, Martin can't drop me because I'm just the designer. Because Lordy Lord Illustrator is insisting that I bring Catherine. She claps her hands with glee. And you'll be coming, obviously, because Catherine won't do anything unless you're there to shield her from the horrors that are Martin and Hannah. Welsh Castle Weekend! Welsh Castle Weekend! I shush her. She has started singing really quite loudly and doing some sort of castle dance, which is quite hip-shaky. And though we have ascertained that there are no senior members of staff in the kitchen, you never know when they'll show up. It's like that thing people say about rats. There's always one 6 feet away from you at all times. Now we just need to find models willing to work for free in 2 days' time, Rachel says. I almost don't want to tell Martin. I don't want him to start liking me or something. It'll throw off the whole balance of the office. Tell him, I say. This is a great idea. And it is. But Rachel's right. Catherine won't go without me, and that means a whole weekend away from home. I'd really hoped that I could spend some of the weekend with Leon. You know, naked. Rachel quirks an eyebrow, clocking my expression. Ah, she says. No, no, this is great. I try to rally. A weekend away with you and Catherine is going to be hilarious. Plus, it's a free castle visit. I'm going to pretend I'm scouting out my future home. Rachel leans back against the fridge, waiting for our teas to brew and watching me carefully. You really like this boy, don't you? I busy myself removing tea bags. I do really like him, actually. It's kind of scary. Nice scary on the whole, but also a bit scary. Well, bring him then, so you don't miss out on seeing him. I look up. Bring him? How am I swinging that one with the powers that be in charge of transport costs? Remind me what this stud looks like, Rachel says, shifting so I can get the milk from the fridge. Tall, dark, handsome, with mysterious sexy smile. Only Rachel could say stud without irony. Reckon he'd model for free? I nearly spit out my mouthful of tea. Rachel grins and passes me a paper towel to help with lipstick damage. Leon? Model? Why not? Well, because... he'd hate it, surely. Or maybe not, actually. He cares so little about what other people think. Someone taking photos of him and putting them on the internet probably wouldn't bother him. But if he did agree to it, that would mean inviting him for a proper weekend away together. If a slightly unconventional one. And that definitely seems serious. Relationship-ish. That thought makes my throat feel tight and starts a little flutter of panic in my stomach. I swallow the feeling away, irritated with myself. Go on. Ask, Rachel insists. I'm betting he'll say yes if it means more time with you. And I'll sort it with Martin. Once I give him this castle, he'll be kissing my ass for days. It's very tricky to know exactly how to broach this conversation. I initially thought it would come up naturally on the call, but oddly enough, castles and or modelling don't come up at all, and now it's 7:40 and I've only got 5 minutes before I know Leon has to head into work. I'm not copping out of asking, though. Since the night when Justin turned up, things with Leon have shifted. This is more than sexual tension and flirty post-it notes now, and for some reason I'm finding that slightly terrifying. When I think about him, I get this rush of unstoppable, smiley joy, chased with a sort of claustrophobic panic. But I suspect that's probably a Justin hang-up, and frankly, I'm done letting those hold me back. So, I begin, pulling my cardigan closer around me. I'm on the balcony. It's become my favourite spot for evening phone calls. You're free this weekend, right?
Mm-hmm,
he says. He's eating his Brinner at the hospice while talking to me, so is even less chatty than usual. But I feel that will actually work to my advantage here. I think this proposal needs to be heard in full before it can be discussed. So I have to go to a Welsh castle for the weekend to take photos of knitwear with Catherine, because I am her personal carer, and despite the fact I am paid a pittance, it is assumed that I will work weekends when told to, and that's just how it is. A moment's silence.
Okay,
Leon says. He doesn't sound annoyed, which, now I think about it, he wouldn't be. It's not like I'm blowing him off, I have to work. And if anyone understands that, Leon does. I relax a bit. But I really want to see you, I say before I can second-guess myself. And Rachel has come up with a potentially terrible idea which could actually be really fun.
Mm.
Leon says, sounding a little nervous. He's heard enough about Rachel to know that her ideas often involve large amounts of alcohol and indiscretion. How would you feel about a free weekend in a Welsh castle with me? In exchange for modelling some knitwear while you're there to go on the Butterfinger social media. There is a loud choking noise at the other end of the phone. You hate the idea, I say, feeling my cheeks go pink. There's a long silence. I should never have suggested this. Leon is all about quiet nights in with wine and good conversation, not parading himself around in front of cameras.
I don't hate the idea,
Leon says.
Just absorbing it.
I wait, giving him some time. The pause is excruciating, and then, just when I think I know exactly how this whole embarrassing conversation is going to end...
All right, then.
I blink. Beneath the balcony, Fabio Fox roams by, and then a police car goes screaming past, siren shrieking. All right, then, I say when it's quiet enough for him to hear me. You'll do it.
Sounds like a relatively small price to pay for a weekend away with you. Plus, the only person who'd likely mock me for it would be Richie, and he doesn't have internet access.
You're serious?
Are you modelling too?
Oh, Martin thinks I'm probably too big, I say, waving an arm. I'll just be there to chaperone.
Will I meet this Martin we like so much? And you'll be there to what?
Chaperone. Sorry, that's Rachel's word for all the Catherine chaperoning I have to do. And yeah, Martin will be coordinating the whole thing. He'll be especially insufferable because he'll be in charge.
Excellent. I can spend my posing time plotting his downfall.
October. Chapter 52. So, I'm standing in between two suits of armour, wearing a woolly jumper, staring into the middle distance. My life has got stranger with Tiffy in it. I've never been afraid of a strange life, but lately have really grown rather comfortable. Set in my ways, as Kay used to say. Can't stay that way for too long with Tiffy around. She's helping Catherine style us models. The other two are waif-like teens. Martin is staring at them as if they're edible. They're nice. But conversation dried up after we caught up on this year's bake-off. And now I'm counting down the minutes until Tiffy next gets to come over and adjust my woolly jumper in indiscernible ways that, I'm pretty sure, are just excuses to touch me. Lordy Lord Illustrator flits around set. He is a pleasant, posh gentleman. His castle is a little ramshackle, but it has rooms and suitably epic views, so everyone seems happy. Except Martin. I joked with Tiffy about plotting his downfall, but when he's not salivating over the other models, he looks as if he's trying to work out the easiest way to push me off the battlements. Can't figure it out. Nobody here knows about Tiffy and me. We thought that was simplest. But I'm wondering if he's worked it out. If he does know, though, why would he care enough to glare at me so much? Oh well. I do as I'm told and stare in slightly different direction. I'm just grateful to get away from the flat this weekend. Had a bad feeling Justin would appear. He will eventually. Clearly wasn't finished when he left last Saturday. And yet, he's been quiet since. No flowers, no text, no turning up wherever Tiffy is despite having no way of knowing where she might happen to be. Suspicious. I'm worried he is biding his time for something. Men like that don't go away after a little scare. Try not to yawn. I've been awake for many, many hours with only small naps. I let my gaze drift in Tiffy's direction. She's in wellies and blue tie-dye jeans, lounging sideways in an enormous Game of Thrones-style chair that stands in the corner of the armory and probably isn't intended for sitting on. Catch a glimpse of smooth skin as she shifts her cardigan falling open. Swallow. Return gaze to particular bit of middle distance insisted upon by photographer. Martin announces, "All right, let's take a 20-minute break." I make a run for it before he can commandeer me into doing something other than talking to Tiffy. So far, I've had to spend my breaks moving ancient weaponry, hoovering up errant straw and checking tiny greys on finger of one of the waif-like models. Me, on approaching Tiffy's throne chair. What is that man's problem with me? Tiffy shakes her head and swings her legs around to get up. Really, I've no idea. He's even more of a dick to you than the rest of us, though, isn't he? Rachel, in a hiss from behind me. Run! Flee! Incoming! Tiffy doesn't need telling twice. She grabs my hand and drags me away in the direction of the front hall. Gigantic stone cavern with three staircases. Catherine, shouting after us. Are you leaving me to deal with him on my own? Tiffy responds. Bloody hell, woman. Just imagine he's a Tory MP in the 70s, all right? I don't turn around to see Catherine's reaction, but can hear Rachel's snort of laughter. Tiffy pulls me into ornate nook that looks as if it might once have housed a statue and kisses me hard in the mouth. All this staring at you all day, it's unbearable, and I am viciously jealous of everyone else getting to do it too. It feels like sipping something warm, spreads downward from my chest, pulls my lips into a smile. Don't know quite what to say, so kiss her instead. Her body presses mine against the cold stone wall, her hands twining around my neck. Tiffy speaks against my mouth.
Next weekend.
Hmm? I'm busy kissing.
It'll be just the two of us, alone, in our flat, and if anyone interrupts us or drags you off to administer to an 18-year-old scratch finger, I will personally have them executed.
Pauses.
Sorry, this whole castle setting is clearly getting into my head.
Pull back. Search her face.
Have I not told her? I must have told her.
What?
What is it?
Richie's trial is on Friday. Sorry, I'm staying at Mam's for the weekend afterwards. Didn't I tell you? Feel a familiar fear. This will be the start of an unpleasant conversation. I've forgotten to tell her something. I'm changing her plans.
No, are you serious?
Stomach writhes. Reach to pull her in again, but she bats my hands away, eyes wide.
You didn't tell me. Leon, I didn't know. I'm so sorry, but Catherine's book launch.
I'm confused now. Why is she sorry?
I wanted to be there, but it's Catherine's book launch on Friday. I can't believe this. Will you tell Richie to call when I'm in the flat so I can apologise properly?
For what? Tiffy rolls her eyes impatiently.
For not being able to come to his appeal.
Stare at her. Blink a bit. Relax as I realise she is in fact not angry with me. Never would expect...
Are you joking? You didn't think I was going to be there. It's Richie.
You really wanted to come?
Yes, Leon. I really, really wanted to come.
Poke her in the cheek with one finger. Tiffy, already laughing. Ow! What was that for? You're real? A real-life human female?
Yes, I'm real, you idiot.
Implausible.
Harry is so nice, and also so very pretty. You're a myth.
No? You'll turn into an ogre at stroke of midnight.
Stop it.
Bloody hell, you have low standards. Why shouldn't I want to come to your brother's appeal? He's my friend too. I actually spoke to him before I spoke to you. I'll have you know. I'm glad you didn't meet him first. He is much more attractive than me. Tiffy wiggles eyebrows.
Is that why you didn't mention the appeal date?
Scuff feet. Thought I told her. She squeezes my arm.
It's all right, honestly. I'm just teasing.
Think of the months of notes and leftover dinners, the never knowing her. Feels so different now I've met her. Can't believe I wasted all that time. Not just those months, but the time before that, the years of dawdling, settling, waiting. No, I should have told you. We should get better at this. We can't keep relying on snatching days together as and when, or on colliding by accident. I pause, testing a thought. Could switch to the occasional day shift? Stay in the flat one night a week? Open my mouth to suggest it, but Tiffy's eyes have gone wide and serious, almost nervous, and I freeze, suddenly sure it's the wrong thing to say. Then, after a moment, she replies brightly.
How about a calendar on the fridge?
Right, that's probably more appropriate. It's early days. I'm being far too keen. Glad I didn't say anything now.
Chapter 53. I stare up at the very distant, very spiderwebby ceiling. It's absolutely bloody freezing in here, even under a duvet and three blankets, with Rachel's body heat to the left of me like a person-shaped radiator. Today has been an extremely frustrating day. It's unusual you get to spend an entire 8 hours staring at the person you fancy. If we're honest, most of my day has been spent fantasising about all of the other people in this castle being vaporised, leaving just me and Leon naked. The vaporizer also took our clothes, with many exciting places to have sex in. I'm still clearly a mess about Justin, and as things progress with Leon, I can feel nice scary tilting towards scary scary a little more often. When Leon started talking about making more time for each other, for instance, the panicky trapped feeling tightened right in again. But beneath that, when I'm thinking clearly, I have such a good feeling about Leon. He's where my mind goes when I'm feeling my best. He makes me even more determined to get over what happened with Justin because I don't want to be carrying the weight of that with Leon. I want to be light and footloose and fancy free. And naked. Stop it, Rachel mumbles into her pillow. Stop what? I hadn't realised she was awake, or I'd have had that whole little thought episode out loud. Your sexual frustration is making me tense, Rachel says, turning over and dragging as much of the duvet as possible with her. I cling on and yank it back an inch or two. I'm not frustrated. Please, I bet you've just been waiting until I go to sleep so you can hump my leg. I poke her with a very cold foot. She yelps. My sexual frustration cannot be stopping you sleeping, I say, conceding the point. If that was possible, nobody would ever have been able to sleep in Victorian times. She turns over to squint at me. You're weird, she says, rolling away again. Go sneak out and find your boyfriend. He's not my boyfriend, I say automatically, the way you learn to from the age of 8. Your special friend, your beau, your squeeze, your... I'm going, I hiss at her, throwing back the duvet. Hannah is gently snoring on the other bed. She actually looks like quite a nice person while she's sleeping, but then it's hard to look bitchy when you're drooling into your pillow. Leon and I have come up with a plan to see each other tonight. Martin has, for some irritating reason, moved Leon into a double room, sharing with the cameraman, which means we can't sneak into bed together. But, with Hannah and the cameraman fast asleep, there's no reason why we can't slip out and go for a castle adventure. The idea was that we'd each get some rest and then meet at 3 in the morning, but I've been too excited to sleep. Still, just woken up is nowhere near as good a look as Hollywood would have you believe, so it's probably a good job I've been lying here awake for hours thinking inappropriate thoughts. I hadn't counted on it being bloody freezing, though. I'd imagined I'd wear just my underwear and a dressing gown. I brought sexy negligee-style underwear and everything. But right now I'm in fleece pyjama bottoms, woolly socks, and 3 jumpers, and there's no way I'm taking these off. So I just slick on some lip gloss, give my hair a ruffle, and ease the door open. It creaks so much it borders on cliché, but Hannah doesn't wake. I slip out of the door as soon as it's just about wide enough and pull it closed behind me, wincing at all the groaning noises. Leon and I are meeting in the kitchen, because if anyone finds us there, we've got a good excuse. Given the number of biscuits I consume at work, nobody will have trouble believing that I need a midnight snack. I power walk down the carpeted hall, keeping a close eye on the rooms that line the corridor in case anyone else is up and about to spot me. Nobody. The power walking is warming me up a bit, so I take the stairs at a jog too, and by the time I arrive in the kitchen, I'm slightly out of breath. The kitchen is the only bit of the castle that looks loved. It's been redone recently, and to my absolute delight, there is an enormous arbor at the far end. I plaster my body against it like a girl who's found a former One Direction member in a nightclub and doesn't plan on leaving without him. Should I be feeling this jealous? Leon says from behind me. I look over my shoulder. He's standing in the doorway, his hair freshly smoothed back in a loose t-shirt and jogging bottoms. If your body heat is higher than this arbor's temperature, I'm yours, I tell him, turning to warm my bum and the back of my legs and to get a better look at him. He closes the space between us, casual, unhurried. There's this understated confidence to him sometimes. He doesn't show it much, but when he does, it's impossibly sexy. He kisses me and I get even warmer. Did you have any trouble sneaking out? I ask,